This is the inaugural episode of On Our Campus, a podcast production of Kind of Company. On Our Campus is dedicated to exposing corruption, discrimination, and misconduct in public higher education. Marty Piercy. Welcome to On Our Campus, where my co-host, Suzette Grelot, and I are going to be talking about issues of transparency and corruption in higher education over the coming seasons. Today is our inaugural episode of On Our Campus. You have quite likely, if you're in Central Oklahoma, you have probably heard of Suzette, whether you realize it off the top of your head or not.
I'm not going to be as kind as the people that came before me and say, in a year from now, we're going to ask for your resignation. I'm going to ask for it now.
So that was Suzette at the rally to end. Yeah. Dope as hell. At the rally to end racism, where her very public battle with the University of Oklahoma began. But we are going to get to that point before we can really explore that. What we really need to talk about is everything that came before it. And so I want to say that Suzette, welcome, by the way. Hi, Suzette. Suzette is a professor and the former dean of international studies at the University of Oklahoma. In January of 2019, Professor Grelot was fired from her position as Dean of the College of International Studies and Vice Provost of International Programs at the university. And since then, she's filed a federal lawsuit against the university, against then-President James Gallagly. Did I say that right? I did, didn't I?
You did.
How about you, Marty? And the current provost, Kyle Harper. And she's been an outspoken critic of the university. And I think that you, listener, probably know this. It is not an easy or comfortable thing to do in Central Oklahoma to be an outspoken critic of anything having to do with our beloved public institution, the University of Oklahoma. And so I just want to start by giving a shout out to certified badass Suzette Grelot. thank you, Suzette.
Oh, thanks, Marty.
We're going to be talking about one specific conversation. You want to get into that a little bit for me?
Yeah. And you know, just to basically follow up on something you just said about the difficulty of being an outspoken critic of the beloved University of Oklahoma, you know, I want to make sure that people understand that I love the University of Oklahoma.
Absolutely.
I love the state of Oklahoma. And that's why I've done everything that I've done to this point. It's why I stayed at the university during very difficult times, why I didn't accept a payout, a sizable payout with public funds to leave the university, which would have just been easier, really, you know, and wouldn't have had the longer term impact on my career and daily life. Could have kept my friends and lots of friends that were like family members.
Sure.
So I lost a lot. And the reason why is because I love the University of Oklahoma and I love the state of Oklahoma. I'm an Oklahoman. As I mentioned in our initial conversation in the intro, I'm from East Tulsa. And, you know, I'm lucky to have gone to college and I'm lucky to have gotten a job at OU where I had no connections. I didn't know anyone. I got a PhD at the University of Georgia and I just happened to be fortunate enough to get a job offer in many places, but one at the University of Oklahoma, and I wanted to come back to my home state. So, you know, all of this is done out of love and respect for public higher ed and for the state of Oklahoma and the institution, the University of Oklahoma. So I think it's really important to start there because the stories that I'm going to tell from here on out, the truth, I guess I should say, I'm going to tell from here on out, you know, is my truth. And it all comes from a place of deep love and respect for OU And even though I went to school at Oklahoma State University, I mean, I'm an Oklahoman, so I have you know, cred in both of our major institutions.
Absolutely.
But what I've seen happen at the University of Oklahoma, what continues to happen at the University of Oklahoma, is unacceptable. And I'm no longer going to, you know, just sit back and watch these things happen, watch people continue to suffer, and watch all of the lost opportunity that this university and the state has because of its governance, because of its leadership, and because of its systemic corruption. So that's, I think, ultimately why I thought it was really important to just start there before we ever even get to the details of the truth.
You know, we spoke in our introductory, like, mini episode about what brings the two of us to the table here. Obviously, your experience in higher ed is what brings you to the table, and not just your experience, but like you just said, you know, your respect for the tradition that is higher education, for the opportunity that represents, right, and for this specific institution that you love. And I would say, for me, having not ever attended University of Oklahoma, I never attended a state school in Oklahoma, but I was born and raised in Oklahoma. Oklahoma is my home. And as a resident of this state, and as an independent journalist, as somebody who, above all of that, most importantly, prizes equity, that's why we're here. And I, again, want to thank you for, because it's obvious that even outside of the same conversation we had before about this being kind of potentially pretty uncomfortable, I think that your dedication to people that you've served is obvious in your behavior and in the way you talk about the work that you do. And I mean, if we all approached our jobs, you'll hear me talk a lot about labor and in my life on this podcast and on Twitter and everywhere else. But if we all approached our labor with integrity, and we could expect our peers to do the same, our world would be so much better. So I want to commend you and just shout out your integrity on this. And so today we're going to start with talking about, well, we're going to start with talking about a specific conversation that you had. Was that in January?
So the conversation where we're going to start today in this first episode is to release the conversations that I had with OU Regent Renzi Stone and former president, then president, David Boren. And the reason why we start there is because this was really kind of the beginning of the end for me, I guess, in the sense that, you know, I had been, and those who worked alongside me had known for a long time, meaning my other executive officers. I mean, even the provost would say about me in public in various ways. He was kind of half joking. I don't think he was joking at all, but he would jokingly say, you know, and Suzette Grelat, who never shies away from giving me her opinion. I mean, I think.
Yeah, we call that, that is what disgraced senator and former comedian Al Franken would refer to as kidding on the square.
Right.
Like when, Vice President Dick Cheney told a peer to go fuck himself on the floor of the Senate. He wasn't kidding. He said he was kidding. He wasn't kidding. He
meant that. Kyle Harper was not kidding when he said she never shies away from giving me her opinion. And I was always kind of honestly engaging on the inside.
Right.
And I think what eventually had to happen was I had to take it to the outside. At some point, it was just very clear. And really that point to me was in 2016. And we're not going to go back that far today.
Sure.
But in future episodes, I want to go all the way back to 1999 when I started at the University of Oklahoma, because I mean, really discrimination, pay inequity, and issues of, sexual harassment have been a part of my life at the University of Oklahoma since day one on the job.
Wow.
And so I'm going to go back to 1999 in a future episode, and I'm going to go back to 2016 when it became very clear to me that that all this blood, sweat, and tears I was giving to this university, and all of those private conversations that I would have, those opinions I would share, the attempts to try to facilitate equity on campus, inclusion on campus, diversity on campus, that was just never, transparency on campus, right. That those were just never going to happen,
sure.
By working on the inside. These people, these leaders, these administrators are just too powerful and too well supported in the status quo.
Sure.
So there was just, the status quo was never gonna, change unless you go on the outside. So this conversation, so the release today, the release, of these conversations with Regent Renzi Stone and former President David Boren, although he was the president when I had these conversations with the two of them independently in February of 2018, really were kind of the beginning of my very kind of public, outspokenness and criticism of the university in the context of the presidential search.
Sure.
And I'll tell you why the presidential search, because I think what a lot of people don't really understand was the presidential search was the opportunity in my mind and in so many other people's minds to make real change at the university. I mean, when you have leadership transition, that's your opportunity to do away with the way things were done before and to get new ways of doing things.
Sure.
And by that, I mean the corrupt cronyism, the secrecy, the mm-hmm. culture of fear,
sure.
The challenges and difficulties that many of us were experiencing while working at the University of Oklahoma under David Boren. And I know that it sounds really odd to a lot of people for me to call out David Boren, but you're going to hear in this conversation with David Boren why I'm calling sure. him out. Because, and even though he obviously, people can have lots of different sides, right? And
absolutely.
David Boren is definitely one of those people. He's got these bright, shiny things that he did. He created a College of International Studies, created all kinds of amazing things, said and did all kinds of amazing things, but he was also a very flawed and troubled person. And I think we've seen that, coming to light.
It's been a topic of a lot of conversation in the past year.
And these conversations we're going to talk about today, Marty, preceded that. I mean, preceded the public knowledge about that. But
sure.
We knew about these sorts, or we suspected these sorts of things on the inside for a long time. Now, whether, wherever that goes, I don't know. I'm not here to comment necessarily on David Boren's sexual misconduct or any future, indictment or anything that's going to happen along those lines. But what I know is that we had problems and they were reflective of a culture that was very problematic. And many of us saw the presidential search process when President Boren announced his resignation or his retirement. We saw that as the opportunity to get a new leader that would bring real needed change.
Sure.
And that isn't what happened, right? And to be honest with you, I was the day that President Boren announced his resignation, and he didn't say, kind of like a Bob Stoops, Lincoln Riley drug deal, where you show up at the press conference and he says, "I'm resigning and here's your new coach." Because honestly, I really thought that would happen, that it was very likely that President Boren was going to say, "I'm resigning or I'm retiring and here's your new president."
Sure.
And when that didn't happen, I was actually hopeful. I thought, this is it. This is the opportunity that we have to really seek change. And then I very naively thought, a search firm has been hired.
Yeah.
Search firms are going to bring, some real change. Of course, I learned, and we'll talk about
that is.
That search firms actually do not are not at all incentivized to bring real change. And so I thought, hooray, many of us thought, hooray, this is the time. And then when we saw that it was not going to happen, when December rolls around, December 2017, January 2018, and we're still waiting for some transparency, and then the regents finally announced there will be none, that many of us were like, fuck that.
Right.
Literally.
Yeah, sure.
Fuck that shit. Yeah. We have got to do and say something.
Yeah.
So, so the open letter.
The
right?
open
so
letter. We, yeah. Let's we start with
publish
that.
Publish the open letter.
Yeah. So this letter was signed by a number of members of faculty, as well as what there were students who.
Everybody in the OU community was it was had could sign the letter. There were 300 and some odd signatures on that initial open letter. It was a collective effort. I mean, my voice, I think, came out on top because I was the only administrator and the only dean that was part of that process. So we had this open letter, and there would have been more signatures, but many people reached out and said, you know, I really want to support this. I really want to sign, but I'm afraid.
Right.
I'm afraid to sign. I'm afraid to put my name on a document that is challenging the regents, that is challenging the status quo.
It's interesting, too, because, like, I definitely want to underscore this because there are people who, I want to say, like my folks, pretty good people who, like, you know, my dad's a big fan of OU football, right? My dad doesn't know anything about how the politics of OU works. You know what I mean? So I think it's really important for us to note that this is public money. This is state money.
That's right.
And tuition. But that money that is tuition is our state's money.
That's right. And
the people who control what happens with that school, that board of regents, you and I don't have any say in who is on that, except for at the ballot box when the governor's race is on. But I just want to point out that when we see something being mishandled at that level, you know, a presidential search, a search for a provost, a search for a dean, that if we see them just bungle this process, we can't vote them out. Yeah. We're stuck with them.
We are stuck with them. And that's exactly what they've done, is they've bungled the search, we'll get to, and they continue to fail the University of Oklahoma and the state of Oklahoma.
And those students, those young people who were there.
The University of Oklahoma's students, faculty, and staff, and their families, right? They've failed us. They've betrayed the public trust, and they've failed us. And so you'll hear that. You'll hear that in this conversation with Renzi Stone. You'll hear, in fact, just to give some context there, after the open letter was published in early February of 2018, I received an email from Renzi. Now, he's the only member of the board that I had any kind of existing relationship with. I was not at all privy to board meetings.
Sure.
And I didn't engage with the board at all, which is perhaps, I mean, I was one of the few deans, I think, that really didn't have much of a relationship with the board. And there is a reason for that. And I'm, again, going back to 2014, mm-hmm. and that will be a subject of a future episode as well, what happened with the Board of Regents and why I was never allowed to engage with the board. So that will come up. But Renzi used to be on the College of International Studies board.
Okay.
And so he's the only one that I really knew.
And that's, just to clarify, that's where you were dean.
I was the dean of the College of International Studies. And before Renzi became a member of the Board of Regents, the OU Board of Regents, he used to be, before that, a member of the College of International Studies board.
Gotcha.
So I worked with him and the other board members closely. So he's the only person that I really knew. So I think we considered each other at the time friends, but he was pissed, you know, mm-hmm. that I had published this letter. And he reached out to me by email, and he said, rather than going public, perhaps a direct conversation would be in order, maybe over coffee or whatever.
Let me just say that specific language leads me to this moment in this podcast. Okay.
Right?
Just wanted to open that beer up because it gets a little serious here.
Right. That's kind of how I felt at the time too. And I might've done the same thing when I read that email. but I just remember thinking, okay, here we go. You know, it begins, because I was waiting for the reaction. And so I spoke with Renzi in February of 2018 about the search. And, And I am sharing that conversation with you today, which means that I recorded the conversation in a one-party state, which is the state of Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And I did so because I know how these people operate. And right. I know that it was going to be important to have a record of what transpired in that conversation.
Sure.
I didn't know exactly what was going to transpire, but I just know that when he said, rather than going public, maybe we should have a direct conversation, that I thought, okay, here we go.
Yeah. That's,
so we finally talk, and the beginning of the conversation, as you'll hear in the full recording, is about Arezzo and study abroad in general. And it was fine. You know, he's supportive of international studies, and me, quite frankly, mm-hmm. he says a few times, but then we turn to the search, right? And I think it's really important for people to hear Renzai's voice, throughout that conversation, you know, and really early on, the two of us both are extending to President Boren a lot of, you know, gratitude and paying a lot of homage deference.
There certainly is a lot of right? deference and homage.
Yeah.
But there are also like some pretty honest
right.
criticism of former President right. Boren.
Well,
or at the time, President
Boren. He was the president at the time. Yeah.
Before we move on, is it okay if we take a quick break?
You bet.
Again, I just want to thank everyone for listening. You're listening to episode one of On Our Campus. I'm Marty Piercy, and I've been talking with co-host Suzette Grelott, professional of international studies at the University of Oklahoma, about her experiences with corruption and misconduct broadly, and more specifically about the lack of transparency in the search for a president to take over after President Boren's retirement. We will be appending the full recording of those conversations. Again, I'd say again, I didn't say it in this episode, but if you would like to join our conversation, we would love that. We know a lot of people are going to have a lot of pretty strong opinions about this, so I fully reserve the right to ignore your bullshit if you're going to name call us. But if you want to get in contact with us, please use our website at www.onourcamp.us, or you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at onourcampus. And we'd love to get some questions and comments, and we'll be right back after a short break. Thank you. Welcome back to On Our Campus. We haven't really gone anywhere. I love saying welcome back. You've been sitting there. I don't think there was an ad. I don't know why. Welcome back.
But we did have a drink.
We did. We did have
a little break and shifted in our chairs.
Shifted in our chairs a little bit. And also, I think it's just really amusing that we are discussing this lack of transparency in the process of searching for a new president in the wake of the retirement of President Boren at the University of Oklahoma. Just the broad, high-level skullduggery of all of it, really. And during that break, a couple of people here in the Half Studios in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, received an email from interim president of the University of Oklahoma, Harris, about the search process
for various other things. No, probably not the president. It was. I don't think they haven't set up a search yet for
right.
the president,
and that's going to be regions, another.
Yeah, the regents I think have kicked that one down the road a little bit, so it's not going to be, I think, until this next summer.
That will be a conversation for the future, whether today or in the slightly more distant future. Not distant future. We're not talking about a year from now, but that's going to look like.
Because mm-hmm,
that's
going to that in the future. For
yeah,
sure.
Some of the discomfort of having this conversation.
Because after this conversation, there are just going to be a ton of questions
sure.
about what, you know, I mean, even just these searches for I mean, my experience, and you'll hear in my conversation with Renzi Stone talking about all of the fake searches that David Boren did. I mean, this was a whole part of the cultural problem at OU, the secrecy, the fear, the shams, you know, the sham searches that went on and on. And
the skullduggery,
right.
The network of this is who, you know.
So just the irony of sitting here having our break and seeing an email come through about searches at OU, because I mean, after you listen to these recordings and after you contemplate and consider what this university does and how it operates, can we really trust them to run legit? These people, the same people run future searches, and that they would be fair and transparent.
9 times out of 10, somebody says these people or those people, I'm pretty upset about it. But if you're talking about rich people with a lot of power who are doing things in the dark, I'm all for calling them these people, right? Well, the first two things that I want to ask you about, Suzette, one, I mean, this is wild. Like some of the things that we hear about here, I want to know your opinion about, is this normal? Like, is this like, do you think that at let's say another state institution, Oklahoma State University, you think it works the same way? Do you think it works the same way in smaller, like in private education? I'm just curious how normal you think this is, and if you could expand on that, how normal or abnormal it is.
Well, it's a really good question, because honestly, my entire career has been at the University of Oklahoma.
Sure.
But I do know the industry. I know higher ed, and I know people across the country and around the world that work in higher ed. And I think that some would say this isn't, corruption is everywhere.
Sure.
Cronyism is everywhere. You know, patronage, these kind of, you know, the ways in which they, you know, coddle donors. I mean, those sorts of things are everywhere, but it is particularly bad at the University of Oklahoma. And a lot of people, you know, have thrown their hands up in the air, left, you know, we've lost so many good people at the University of Oklahoma because they look at what happens there and they're just like, this is just fucking insanity. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't, this is not legit. You know?
Right.
And so you'll hear, like, you know, in these conversations, and this is again, a reason why I'm going to shine light on these conversations. Right now, these two conversations, the conversation with Renzi Stone and the conversation with David Boren, is you'll pick up on these things that are like not normal, you know, or at least shouldn't be normal. These were normal for OU.
Right.
But these should not be normal operating procedures, right?
Certainly, I mean, not for a public institution.
Right. I mean, this is a public university, and you have a member of the Board of Regents who says, you know, basically, Boren stayed too long.
It is time to do it differently, and it is time to get fresh blood. And there are some great things that the man accomplished, but he stayed too long. And so we recognize that, and we are aligned and on the same page on helping move him to the next phase of his life and get a new person in and help him not taint the new person when the new person comes in.
Right. Well, the regents are in charge of that, aren't they? I mean, the president works for the regents, not the other way around.
Sure.
So, I mean, he stayed too long. Aren't you responsible for governing the university and making sure that the president doesn't stay too long and fuck everything up? And, you know, he says that he acknowledges that Boren and the culture there was a disaster in many ways. That's his quote.
We know that it's a disaster in a lot of ways.
We know it's a disaster in many ways. We, the regents, know that it's a disaster in
right.
many ways. I mean, what did they know? Did they know?
Sure.
'Cause, I mean, this was, again, February 2018. The public investigation, or the investigation into Boren's sexual misconduct, didn't start for several months after that. So did they know about that? Was it just financial disaster that they're talking to? I mean, he's referring to culture.
Yeah.
He's referring to culture and problems with morale. And so he says he stayed too long. You know, there was no succession plan. He even said, you know, the regents, he even says, that's on us.
Yeah.
You know,
and he said that his third meeting, I believe he says in this conversation, my third meeting, I raised my hand and I said, where's the succession plan? And because no company can work like that, right?
Right.
That was his idea.
Right.
Although I've worked in the nonprofit world for a long time, and let me tell you, it's not uncommon. But
he's admitting that that's a problem.
Yeah, that's problematic.
And that was years ago. And so why? I mean, if that's on the regents, why were they letting this happen? Why were they letting this happen? Why did he stay too long? Why did they let this disaster go on? To be honest with you, when he said that, Marty, I kind of felt validated.
Sure.
I mean, it was because I was like, I'm thinking, are we crazy? You know, am I crazy? Is the University of Oklahoma, my colleagues, people that are upset about what's going on under Boren at the University of Oklahoma, are we crazy? And then to have a member of the Board of Regents admit that it's disastrous and that he stayed too long and that it was problematic, made me go, okay, I've been validated. But at the same time, literally, like, my heart sunk, because then I'm like, why? This is your job, member of the Board of Regents. You and your colleagues are there to serve the public trust and to make sure that this institution that's got, $2 billion budget is running well and that its leaders have integrity and that they are, operating appropriately. And yet he's admitting that he's admitting that their awareness of it. And so I was just both at the same time kind of validated and
right.
So hurt.
I and other members of the public have been routinely, systematically gaslit by this organization for years. I don't want to put too fine a point on it. Having your survivorhood of being mistreated, along with your colleagues and your students. And I know you don't go into higher education because you want work peers. You go into higher education because you want to educate younger people or non-traditional students too. But you want to be able to share that gift. And realizing, like, having somebody with power saying, yeah, we fucked it up, and it's not just me. It was fucked up when I got here and I didn't fix it. Like, that's a pretty powerful thing. But when that, put on my therapist hat for like 5 seconds, when you get an apology that doesn't come with a change in behavior, it is meaningless.
Right. Because that's what happened after this conversation, right? Is nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we went back and forth a little bit by text. He basically dug in his heels. I felt like the conversation was basically, he was just trying to, assuage my concerns, but not really do anything about them.
Sure.
And it wasn't just, again, you can hear me tell this man, these aren't just my concerns.
Right.
And people out there know these were not just my concerns. I was putting that out there as there are many people worried about these things. And it was like, he was just trying to shut me up,
Right.
And so,
let's be co-conspiritors.
Let's be co-conspirators
on my agenda.
That's right.
Well, and here's the thing. I don't want anybody to listen to this conversation or read this story in a local news outlet or listen to this, these conversations and think this professor got her feelings hurt because she lost her job. I don't want anybody to walk away, because that's not the takeaway from this, not even sort of, or else you would have walked away with that money and you would have signed the non-disclosure agreement.
That's
what happens when somebody gets their feelings hurt and it's just about their ego. But,
speaking of ego, listen to Ren Zeistone talk about how the regents were so worried about being criticized.
How many times in
multiple.
We will be criticized. If we have 21 people, it should have been 22. If we have 50 people, it should have been 49. If we just do it ourselves, we should have had a lot more. And so it was less about the right number, and it was more about, we will be criticized no matter how we run this process.
Yeah, so that's how many times he said getting criticized.
Over and over again, worried about being criticized. If we do this, if we do that, we're going to be criticized. I mean, God, it was like, I kept thinking, Wow. What that's leadership right there, right?
Sure.
I'm so worried. I mean, you hear me say to him, leaders have to be bold and courageous. They shouldn't be wimpy. And all I kept hearing from what was coming out of Renzi's mouth was wimpy leadership
was
a process.
For us, the rich people who run this shit, getting criticized constantly. And I would say, as my buddy Nate said, if you're going to get criticized, whichever way you do it, fucking do it right. And just do it the right way then. Do it with integrity. Do it with some chutzpah. Like stand up and do it well, right? Because you're going to get criticized either way. And I don't think Renzi is wrong about that. I should call him Mr. Stone. I don't fucking know the guy. Mr. Stone is not wrong. Whatever they would have done.
Just call him Renzi, Marty.
Okay, Renzi. It's fun to say. I don't know him. He's got a fun name. He's not wrong. They would have been criticized whatever they did, but they could have been criticized for doing it well and doing it transparently. And I think I would always hang my hat on that.
On that end.
Well, let me use that as a springboard, because maybe it's normal, but it shouldn't be. I think we can all agree on that. And again, like I was saying, I don't want this to come across as just a professor who got upset that they lost position, they lost status. I don't think that's the case at all. I'm a lefty. I think anybody who knows anything about me knows that I am like a pretty far left type of, you know, like that's who I am. But part of what being in the left means to me is, like you say, representing the public trust. And this has real world consequences that I think they span the spectrum of what, it's certainly bipartisan what these real world consequences are for betraying that public trust. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So one of the things about why I did and continue to do this is my academic background is in studying corruption. It's in studying organized crime and in studying the arms trade, really. So my background was in studying weapons proliferation in the former Soviet region. I worked with I studied a lot of people that were quite corrupt in that part of the world. And so studying arms traffickers and arms trafficking and counterfeiting, I know what corruption looks like. I know what secrecy looks like. I know how hard it is to study and to understand those sorts of things. But I also see all of the detrimental effects of it, right? And so in any corrupt system, the consequences are significant. Corruption leads to instability. I think we've seen that, haven't we? There's instability in terms of transition from one regime at the University of Oklahoma to another regime. That transition from Bourne to Gallagher was ridiculous, ridiculously unstable. We had a year's worth of instability. And of course, now, you know, and we're going to get to this in the future, where we're headed, continued instability. So difficulty in transition, poor leadership, you know, violating the public trust. These are costly things.
Sure.
Corruption is costly to the rest of us.
To the rest of us.
Right? It's costly to the rest of us. We pay the price for that. And the university and the state are going to pay the price in many, many ways. Damage to their reputation, to their brand, to their image, that's already happened. Damage to morale that was already there. You hear Renzi Stone admit that they're very aware of poor morale.
We know that there's all sorts of morale issues. You know, we are aware of a lot of these.
And that's a reflection of corruption. Lack of commitment to the mission. I mean, these are things that we cannot afford and we need to fix. And I don't hear in the voice of Renzi Stone and anything we've seen since then that would indicate that they're committed to actually fixing it. They're committed to trying to cover their own asses.
Right.
So, but to stay on the point of this particular conversation, right? I'm thinking to myself, I know what I'm hearing. I know what I'm seeing, you know, I've been gaslighted. I mean, we've all been made to feel crazy, but yet I'm like, I know what I'm seeing and I know what I'm hearing and it's got to stop. And so pushing Renzi Stone on this issue, again, I think he just, you know, he revealed some very interesting things problematic things that raise all kinds of questions about what the regents were doing. And then, of course, if you move then into the conversation with President Boren, then President Boren, it raises another question, and that is the way in which our leaders are chosen at the University of Oklahoma. And both of them reference the sham search that led to Provost Kyle Harper becoming provost.
We're looking for somebody that looks a lot like Kyle Harper.
Right. And I have to tell you, that was one of the most difficult things I've ever had to do, was chair, co-chair, I guess one should say technically, the search for the provost when Kyle Harper was hired. And I say co-chair because I had a dean colleague that was my co-chair who did nothing. So I really chaired the search, but nonetheless, Rinzai Stone was at that time on the board of the College of International Studies. This was in the fall of 2014 and into the spring of 2015. And I knew, everybody knew that President Boren was going to hire Kyle Harper, who had already been positioned in multiple administrative, you know, in multiple, just positioned, you know, he was brought back after his PhD into a position at the University of Oklahoma after he graduated from the University of Oklahoma with his undergraduate degree. He goes off and gets his PhD, comes back into a position that was provided for him. You know, he gets in, you know, becomes a director of an institute. It's provided for him. He becomes senior vice provost, a position that was created for him. So everybody knew where this was going. And you hear Rinzai Stone admit that, right? Now, I tout in that conversation with Rinzai Stone, I tout the search process for that provost position, because I knew I knew where we were headed, but my job as the chair, co-chair of that search was to interview candidates and outline the pros and cons of those candidates and hand it off to the president for him to make a decision. And I knew we all knew what the decision was going to be.
Sure.
You know, he said to me, "I'm not adverse to somebody like Kyle Harper," right? And you hear Rinzai Stone say, "I'm looking for somebody a lot like Kyle Harper."
What specific native quality about Kyle Harper do you think that they were looking for in a candidate?
President Boren was looking for?
Yes.
This is a really tough thing to answer. And to be honest, I mean, I think a lot of people speculate about what this was all about. I'm not even really going to go down that road.
But what I do know
is that it is very unorthodox to have a provost at his age with the lack of experience that he had. He'd never been a department chair. He'd never been a dean. He'd never held an administrative position beyond the director of a small institute. Mm-hmm. He was in his mid-30s at best. You know, this is unheard of and very unorthodox. And in fact, when I was running the search, the candidates, people, we got very few applications even, because people did their homework.
Sure.
And they knew that this was not going to be a real search. I had people call me and say, "Is this a real search?" You know, and my answer was, "I'm conducting a search."
Right.
I have to conduct a search, and I'm going to do that. And I'm going to conduct a search, and we're going to have an open process. We're going to have, candidates that will come to campus. And so Kyle and two other candidates came to campus. They met people around campus. So you hear me touting the process to Rinzai Stone, but I also then say, it doesn't matter what the process is if you already have chosen who the person's going to be.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
And Rinzai agrees.
Yeah. It listening to that conversation really reminded me of the dog and pony show that was the MAPS 4 process here in Oklahoma City. Let's have 30 fucking hours of meetings where people come in and plead their case. And then at the end, we find out it's a sweepstakes. You're all getting it. Some of you have had to compromise on what you're asking for because you don't count as much as the very wealthy in our community. And all of those counselors voted for it. They voted unanimously. And you know why? Because they had to, right? I mean, that's what that looks like to me.
This is exactly what it sounds like. Now, at the end of the day, I handed a memo to President Boren that said, here were the three candidates. Here's the process we used. Here are the strengths and weaknesses of each of the candidates. Now it's your choice, right? But I cautioned him. And you hear President Boren in that conversation, which he called me, by the way, to talk about Iranian studies, as you can hear from the beginning and right. some of the end of that conversation. But I knew that this was going to come up because this was right after the open letter was published. He then countered with a letter to the editor saying, basically disagreeing with the open letter, saying that we're not going to get the right candidates if we open it up. But you hear him say that short little clip of him where he talks about, I don't really know what's going to go on. I'm probably going to have more of a say later, which is kind of funny considering yeah. Renzi Stone then says he will have no say at all. Yeah. Right. So these people are not even on the same page at all. Right. These are our leaders and they're not even on the same page. But he says, kind of, you know, laughingly, I remember you were on the provost search. And I'm kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, I sure was.
And he says, I remember how you felt about that or how you felt about him, how some of the members of the committee felt about Kyle.
I remember you were on the search committee for Kyle.
Yeah.
And I remember your opinion and some of the opinion of the search committee. If I had probably not sort of tried to really push that so hard, it probably would not have happened.
Because we told President Boren, I told President Boren, I delivered a memo to President Boren that said that Kyle Harper was inexperienced. He was going to struggle to maintain any credibility in that kind sure. of position. And we had significant concerns given his background, given his previous writings about women, about gender issues, mm-hmm. about foreign nationals. We had real serious concerns about his commitment to diversity and inclusion.
Yeah.
And to this day, I'm going to maintain that this university does not have any credibility on issues of diversity and inclusion as long as he is provost. But nonetheless, you hear President Boren say, if I hadn't pushed so hard for that, it wouldn't have happened.
Literally.
You hear that. Renzi Stone say that was a sham search mm-hmm. and that the regents despise that. Those are his words. We despise that.
The whole thing just reeks of a lack of trust, which, by the way, you're right. There is a lack of trust. And it's sowed by David and how he's governed for the last 23 years. And you're right about that. I know that. Because your search, I was appointed to that search committee, and you know what I was instructed? We're looking for somebody that looks a lot like Kyle Harper.
Yeah.
That's what was instructed to me.
Exactly.
And so that's not the search we're running. In fact, it's the opposite of what we're running. And I use that as an example with the regents. Said, I'm not going to be a part of something like that. And whether Kyle was the perfect choice or not is irrelevant. You know, the search was like every other search that he's done. And our regents absolutely despise that.
It's like every other search he's done. Now, here we are again. And again, I'm shining light on this so right. that people hear and see in their minds their leaders violating the public trust by lining up unqualified people into positions that are of high importance, high pay. I mean, we're talking.
Yeah.
Kyle Harper started his job as provost at $325,000 fucking dollars a year.
Wow.
At the age of 30-something, whatever, without any experience. So wow. These are the kinds of things, Marty, that yeah. we were watching and we were experiencing and we were suffering through. Because it was like, how can any of us get ahead, right? I mean, I watched all these other deans get positioned, right? And I even admit to Renzi Stone, I benefited from no search. I mm-hmm. fully expected to compete for my job. Mm-hmm. I fully expected. And I competed for every other job I had at OU.
Sure.
So most women do, by the way. Most women do.
That's probably a coincidence, JK.
I'm sure.
Of course not.
So, you know, these are the kinds of things I have to go look at my colleagues in the face and say, this is what's going to happen, you know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and somehow feel good about that, you know? So this is what we were dealing with. And so what I think the public needs to understand, what the people of the state of Oklahoma and what the community, at the University of Oklahoma needs to understand is that this is what we were dealing with. This is what led us to ask for transparency in the search. We were sick of that bullshit. We were sick of the corruption, the cronyism, the patronage, the sham searches, the secrecy, the marginalization of peoples, the discrimination, all these things. Sick of it. We were sick of it then. We're sick of it now. Mm-hmm. And it's gotta stop. It has to stop. Right. And so that led us to ask for the transparency in the search. That then led to, of course, no transparency in the search.
No.
That led to this disaster after that. And of course, public criticism of the University of Oklahoma and a challenge to these powerful people and the challenge to the status quo means people like me get fired. So there, that's where we are.
Yeah.
You can hear it for yourself with your own ears. You can hear these two people say these things. I'm not making it up.
No, you're not.
There are plenty of things I say in there that you're going to hear too. You know, some deference that I pay, whatever. I'm exposing myself too. But I mean, the fact is that they've got to stop leading this institution this way. And we have to demand it. It's got to happen.
I agree. You would think that the song and dance from a lot of the leadership in our state and in our country would stand rigid against the kind of boondoggles that we see. But it's just not, because boondoggles are good for them, right?
They're good for them, and they really don't get exposed very often.
No.
You know, and I think that's the difference, is that when people can't, you can't ignore what these people have said in their own voices. You can't ignore it. And so that, I think, is my biggest hope, is that it's not just me telling the story of these conversations, you're hearing it from them directly.
As my friend Jack would say, I admire your sand. Like, it's not an easy thing to do, to stand up to one of the largest and most beloved institutions in our community. It's like the those heroes from the Boston Globe shining a light on the church. You know, that was hard to do. And I admire and respect your integrity and your grit. Just, this is hard to do. And I really admire you, Suzette.
Well, thank you, Marty. I appreciate that. And I'm not going to lie, it's scary.
Yeah.
I'm scared. I'm shaking now. Yeah. And I was shaking in, you know, in January of 2019 when I asked for fucking resignation. I mean, these are scary people.
Yeah.
And these are difficult things to do, but it's the right thing to do. And I sleep better at night because of it. And so I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to keep it up. And I just hope that others will join us and ask for transparency from here on out.
Well, I do too. And we're not finished here. So this is just the end of our inaugural episode of On Our Campus. This is a podcast dedicated to exposing corruption, discrimination, and misconduct on college campuses. This season, we're going to be focusing on the search for, well, the search for integrity among the leadership of the University of Oklahoma.
We're searching for integrity.
That's most of what we're going to be talking about. You've been listening to a conversation with me, Marty Piercy. You can find me on Twitter at Marty Piercy. And if you're interested in the workings of local government, you can follow me at OKC_span, where I live tweet public meetings. And we've been talking with my co-host here, Suzette Grelot. If you are on the internet and wanted people to be able to contact you, that's up to you. I'm not going to out your handle.
I'm on Twitter. I think everyone knows that, at Suzette Grelot. But definitely send us your comments and your questions either directly to Marty or to me or to at On Our Campus. We really do, as Marty said at the outset, want this to be a conversation. We want this to be obviously an opportunity for us to work together on these issues. And so send us your comments and your questions, and we're happy to answer. And I think we will have an episode here soon in the future, just addressing people's comments and questions. So,
I am certain we'll get plenty of them. You can email directly at connect@onourcamp.us.
connect@onourcamp.us.
Yeah, or it might be easier
it's
to hit us
on
up
onourcamp.us.
It might be easier to find us on Instagram or Twitter @onourcampus. And our website is www.onourcamp.us. And so thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll be back for sure. And so on behalf of Suzette Grelot, thank you so much for joining us at On Our Campus. And I'm Marty Piercy, and we will speak again soon. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Marty Piercy and me talk about issues of corruption among the administration at the University of Oklahoma. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this discussion or answer any questions you might have. You can send us an email at connect@onourcamp.us, as well as follow and interact with us on Twitter and Instagram @onourcampus. We hope that you too are ready to eliminate systemic corruption in public higher education, as we all deserve better. For more information about this show and how you can get involved, visit us on the web at www.onourcamp.us. For Marty Piercy and everyone at On Our Campus, I'm Suzette Grelot.